Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Tracy McClure. Thanks for joining me. Coming up today, looking ahead to tomorrow's visit by Pope Benedict to Rome Synagogue. And we go back to the 15th century when the Pope returns to Rome and begins a series of embellishments of the Eternal City with new architecture and art. On Sunday, Pope Benedict encounters Rome's Jewish community, the second time in history that a pontiff crosses Rome's Tiber River to visit the Jewish synagogue. The visit also comes on the occasion of the Day for Dialogue between Catholics and Jews. Well, earlier in the week, Cardinal Walter Kasper, who heads the Vatican Commission for Relations with Jews, told journalists about the significance of this event.
Vuole confermare questi rapporti cresciuti, maturati degli ultimi decenni.
The cardinal stressed that despite the ongoing difficulties in the Catholic Church's dialogue with the Jewish world, Pope Benedict's aim is to underline the many aspects that the two faiths share in common in our increasingly secular world. Well, many of the Jewish leaders attending the Pope's visit to the synagogue Sunday will also be taking part in a meeting next week between delegations from the Chief Rabbinate of Israel and the Holy See's Commission for Religious Relations with Jews. Father Norbert Hoffman is secretary of that commission. He told Philippa Hitchin about what's on the agenda.
It's a very, significant event, not only because it is in Rome. It is a significant event for the whole Jewry, for Judaism on a worldwide level. For example, now there will be invited Jews from all over the world, from Israel, from the United States, from France, from most countries in which Jews are living and have significant communities. So I would say Benedict XVI wants to express and to show continuity regarding the commitment to the Jewish-Catholic dialogue. And, in 5 years, Benedict XVI, he visited already two synagogues, the synagogue in Cologne, then the synagogue in New York, the Park East Synagogue, in 2008. He went to Auschwitz. He had a very significant speech there in Auschwitz. And he went to the Holy Land. He went to the Kotel, to the Western Wall, to stay there in meditation. He put a prayer of peace there in this wall. And he did really all what John Paul II did before, but with his own style. And he has another background. He's a German pope, and he sees Jewish-Catholic relations mainly on the aspect of reconciliation. Reconciliation with the Jewish people is very important for Benedict XVI. And it's on his heart to improve these relations with the Jewish people. And he shows that by all these events, by the visit of the Holy Land, by going to two synagogues, by going to Auschwitz, by receiving Jewish groups in the Vatican. So it's on his heart to deepen and to promote Jewish-Catholic relations.
You've mentioned many of the highlights, as you say, over the past year or two. There have also been some very difficult moments, some moments of great tension, if we think of the recent announcement for Pius XII, and previously the Good Friday prayer and so on, and the Williamson case. These seem to point in the opposite direction of what you're saying, a sort of, if you like, tension between reconciliation and yet the difficulties that remain.
I wouldn't see it like that because, let's say, the Williamson affair, the Good Friday prayer issue, and also the Pius XII issue, that's not directed to the Jewish community.
And yet they see it that way in many cases.
Yeah, the Latin Mass and this Good Friday prayer. That's another issue that has nothing to do with Jewish-Catholic relations from the origin of his intentions. So, in the end, Jews were involved. That's clear, and they should have been involved because it touched Jewish sensibility. But it was not directed mainly against the Jewish people.
Do you think that this visit will later rest some of these outstanding tensions? Let's put it that way.
Pius XII, this issue is, was, and will be a controversy issue in Jewish-Catholic relations. And also after this visit of the Pope, there will be discussions about the historical role of Pius XII regarding the Shoah, avoiding to deport other Jews, Italian Jews to Auschwitz, and so on. That's very clear that this issue will remain. But important is the atmosphere. And I think this visit of Pope Benedict XVI to the Roman Synagogue will improve the atmosphere. So we can speak more frankly, in friendship, kindly about this issue. I'm sure that there will be no break after this visit regarding the issue of Pius XII, because our relations are solid now. I think we can discuss also controversial matters in friendship.
You're also holding next week the meeting of the Chief Rabbinate of Israel and the Holy See's Commission for Religious Relations with Jews. Can you tell us what will be on the agenda there? What progress do you hope to make there?
We started this dialogue with the Chief Rabbinate in 2002, and we have a lot of good fruits of this dialogue. And it's the ninth meeting now. The last two meetings couldn't take place because of this Good Friday prayer, because of the Williamson affair. And now after these tricky moments, we will meet again in joy and in friendship. And we will speak about ecology, about ecological issues, about creation. Is the human being allowed to intervene in what kind, and so on. Jewish perspectives, Catholic perspectives, and this meeting will start on Sunday evening and go through Monday to Tuesday, and on Wednesday morning the Jewish delegation will go back to Israel. And I'm looking forward to this meeting because I will meet good old friends, and we will also have a good time together.
This is the official agenda. Of course, you've got many Catholic leaders from the Holy Land there together with these Jewish leaders. I imagine the whole question of the difficulties of the Catholic community in the Holy Land will still figure quite highly. Mm. What do you hope can be achieved in this sense in improving their situation?
I mentioned the theme, but of course we will discuss current issues. The Jews have the right to put on the desk issues, and we also, and of course we always are speaking of the concrete current actual situation in Israel, in the Holy Land. There are a lot of difficulties for the Catholic Church, and they are very open to hear our concerns, and sometimes they are also doing something to realize the things that are behind our concerns.
How much, this is a religious commission on dialogue, how much can this, though, influence perhaps the situation, the tensions that are discussed in the bilateral commission with the Holy See and the State of Israel?
On our Catholic side, we are distinguishing sharply between political matters and religious matters. The Jewish people sometimes don't do that. And I would dare to say that this dialogue improved the atmosphere also for the political discussions and negotiations. And sometimes in the last year we spoke also openly about the problems of the political negotiations.
So, for example, the difficulties of getting visas, or yes, the difficulties of for the community there, with building the churches and the tax situations.
Legal status of the Catholic Church there, the tax situation, let's say, all these issues that are on the table regarding the political negotiations with the State of Israel. Mm.
Do you hope to make any breakthroughs, let's say, this on this particular meeting? Are your hopes high?
For me, it's a breakthrough that we are meeting after 2 years, after these tricky situations. And then we have leave it to the Holy Spirit, how the Holy Spirit wants to be active in our dialogues.
The Israeli ambassador wrote an interesting article in the Osservatore Romano talking about why so many Jews in Israel particularly are not interested, do not feel the need to continue this dialogue with the Catholic Church. What's your reaction to that?
I tell you a little story. I went by a public bus from Jerusalem to the Kinneret, to the north, to Galilee. Next to me there was a young boy of 13 years. And we spoke about about several things. And I asked him, what do you know about Christianity? And he told me, yes, the Crusades, then the Shoah, and so on, only negative things. And I ask him, do you know other things? Oh, no, Christianity, this is what I know about that.
What he's taught in school.
Yes, and Inquisition, Crusades, Shoah. And then, yes, this was for me very enlightening, because the education system in the state of Israel is not teaching explicitly Christianity. So most of the people don't know anything about Christianity in Israel. So they don't. Maybe most of them, or a lot of them, don't feel the need to get in contact with Christianity, because they feel they are living in a Jewish state. And of course, also the Jewish religion is self-sufficient in the sense that they don't need Christianity or Islam. They're very proud of being Jews. Moses received the commandments by God, and they are living this commandment. So the Torah is the center of their religious identity, and they have a cultural identity. So why dialoguing with Jewish, with Christian people on the Jewish side in a Jewish state of Israel? This maybe can be some of the reasons. And the ambassador wrote also about these things in his article.
How does that affect, though, the perspectives, the future of the dialogue?
No, we are protagonists in the dialogue regarding the situation in Israel. So these are courageous rabbis that are dialoguing with the Catholic Church. They give a strong testimony to their own people in Israel that we have to dialogue with the Christian people and with the Catholic Church. And I'm very happy about this.
Israel's ambassador to the Holy See, Mordecai Levy, told me that Pope Benedict's visit is being looked at as significant for the worldwide Jewish community.
It has definitely a historical dimension, and it will attract a lot of visitors from everywhere, from the Jewish world, which would like to be present when this visit is taking place. I can say from my country that the Vice Prime Minister, Minister Silvan Shalom will come. There will be the whole delegation of the Chief Rabbinate of Israel coming, and they particularly used this occasion in order to conclude this papal visit with the beginning of the annual Catholic Jewish dialogue.
Let's look back for a second at the last papal visit to the Rome Synagogue. Of course, it was John Paul II who made that very historic visit, yes, in 1986. What did that visit mean for the Jewish community?
Well, everything which is a first is of immense importance. And it is definitely also very much shaped by the personalities who were engaged in this meeting. On one side, the Pope, John Paul II. On other side, Rabbi Elio Toaf. But once the beginning has been made, and you can only ask why it took 2,000 years that it was done, but once this tradition is established, I think it is... if not an obligation, it exists as a model for further popes. And I think Pope Benedict XVI, which sees himself very much in the footsteps of John Paul, is also in this case doing the right thing. As much as he came to the Holy Land, to Israel, for a pilgrimage, which of course had also political dimensions, I think he is also planning to visit the synagogue. And by that, he is first of all establishing a tradition which will be probably a model for all further popes in the future. And secondly, also to corroborate the special relationship which he has with the Roman Jewry. And everyone who knows the history between the papacy and the Roman Jewry knows that it is not an easy chapter in history.
Now, of course, like you've mentioned a few of these examples of Pope going to the Holy Land and so on. This is also the third visit to a synagogue by Pope Benedict. But he also visited the Holocaust Museum in Yad Vashem, yes, and also Auschwitz in 2006.
Yes, yes.
Do you have any opinions about what Pope Benedict, his attitude towards the Jewish community?
Well, I would say the following. You enumerated all those sites, which has each of them in itself has a tremendous symbolic value. But the symbolic values are not always on the same level. I think it is one thing to think of a visit of a synagogue, which is a place of worship, and not necessarily memory. Well, worship has to do with memory, but anyway, it is first of all a liturgical worship place, which is designed to pay respect to the sister, daughter, or elderly brother's religion. So this is a level of, I would say, how to shape the relationship within the two religions, which are on one side very close to each other, but on the other side very far from each other. So I think this needs to be adjusted, and I think this is one step in the right direction to adjust and to end up, after all, an animosity which lasts almost 2,000 years. We have to see all those steps in a very broad historical perspective. Otherwise, not everybody will understand what the Pope and the Jews have in mind. The Pope and the Jews have in mind to end up an animosity, an historical animosity and a historical misunderstanding.
Right. And they want to end it, you're saying?
Yes. This is a process of finishing up. I see this process dramatically opened with the Nostra Aetate, with the Second Vatican Council in 64-65. And then you can see one layer upon the other, which is designed that the last Jew and the last Catholic will understand that there is a need for a new beginning between us. And this is not necessarily only a theological one. This is also a historical a new beginning. Now, the Shoah Yad Vashem visit or the Auschwitz camp are not on the same level, to my mind. They are on the level of traumatic places, which there are wounds which need to be healed. But it's not easy. It's not easy because sometimes the expectations of both sides need to be adjusted, and we are very sensitive. Jews are very sensitive on that, and we have to learn also about the sensitivities of others. And both places have shown that there still needs improvement in order to be on the same wavelength. Mm. The clear statements, which were probably more political, and it is definitely has also a political dimension, he about the Holocaust, fighting anti-Semitism against negationists of Shoah and all that, were done. And when he came to Israel and when he left Israel, but the words in the Yad Vashem, which from the Israeli side were highly expected and very much anticipated, were actually a spiritual message of the meaning of memory and name. And this kind of homily, I think, was very well chosen, but it surprised most Israelis who didn't grasp it immediately, and everybody was at the beginning, disappointed. What is he saying there? He's not saying this and this and this and this. As if you have, so to speak, already a routine, what should be said on such occasions. I think he taught us in a way a lesson that there are different ways to express things, and I think as a very deep going thinker as he is, and also a theologian, he is entitled to express it in his own way, and he did it in an admirable way in Yad Vashem. I'm sure that in the coming synagogue, he will also express himself in his own way. He will not respond, we will advise you to do A, B, C, to say C, D, Y. He will not do that. He will do it his own way. And I think since we are sure that he has good intentions, and this is what can be concluded from his tenure up to now, I think it will be listened to and also understood well.
And one last question regarding the dialogue between Catholics and Jews. What are your expectations for the future months, the future few years?
When I was coming here 1 year and a half, I was confronted with one remark. Well, expect here in our relations, and it was meant not only with Israel, but also with the Jewish world, about a lot of ritual polemics. I hope that there will be, although I know that ritual polemics are an ingredient in the relations, I hope they will be reduced. I cannot exclude that they will not reoccur, because after all, we speak about Jews and Catholics, and I know that not all of Jews, all the Jews and not all the Catholics do agree about this kind of rapprochement, which I welcome very much, and I'm sure that Pope Benedict and others do welcome as well. So it depends really how to convince each one, own camp, so to speak, that this is the right step. I'm very happy that Pius XII decision about heroic virtues, which is an internal issue of the Church, is not casting its shadow on the papal visit to the synagogue, although everyone knows that the historical problem is still not resolved, and it is expected that it will create debate. We will not be, and for the reasons why the decision was done before or not after, this is an irrelevant question, because it is on different levels. But it seems to me that the web of relationship and the measure of goodwill on both sides is strong enough that it will not cast a shadow on the visit.
Mr. Mordecai Levy is Israel's ambassador to the Holy See. And now, in part 24 of her historical program, Vatican Centuries, Jill Bevilacqua takes us back to the 15th century, when, after a century of turmoil, the Pope returns to Rome.
Chapter 24, The Earthly City.
The long medieval twilight was over. In every sense, the horizons were widening.
Impatient of the circumscribed world they inhabited, men were pushing forward into the unknown.
In 1434, a Portuguese ship rounded Cape Bojador, the Saharan headland believed to be the edge of the earth, beyond which lay only the boiling waters of the Sea of Darkness. Now the way was open for a great new trade route, for the age of maritime discovery, and, on the negative side, for the start of the slave trade.
By the middle of the 15th century, the Eastern Empire was no more. Constantinople was in the hands of the Turks. And fleeing before the conquerors came refugee scholars bringing precious manuscripts.
The classical revival was at its height. In Germany, Johann Gutenberg was setting up his printing press, to be followed by William Caxton in England.
But the city of Florence was the crucible of all that was new and vital in thought and art. And the papacy, struggling to re-establish itself after a century of disasters, of exile and schism, saw in the new artists a hope for the earthly city and brought them to Rome.
When Martin V was elected Pope at the Council of Constance in 1417, the Roman people were ecstatic. It was 135 years since there had been a Roman on the throne of Peter. It was reported that when they heard the news, the Romans were so excited they were unable to speak.
But it was 3 years before the new pope was able to take up residence. Political confusion in the centre and south of Italy and the ruinous condition of Rome itself delayed the pontiff's arrival, and he was obliged to wait in Florence until the situation improved. Finally, on the 30th of September 1420, Martin V entered Rome.
The new pope immediately set about putting things to rights. He appointed special street superintendents to protect citizens from delinquents and set up guardians along the city walls.
The papal residences were so badly damaged that for a time the pope, who came of the noble Colonna family, had to live in one of his family's palaces. He now ordered the restoration of St. John Lateran and many other churches and called in famous artists to decorate them.
The Council of Constance, which had elected Martin, had been called to stamp out heresies and reform church customs. It had condemned John Huss, who was burnt as a heretic. Now Pope Martin set up a commission of three cardinals to implement the reforms.
He made the college more international and introduced new rules to guarantee his control over its members and govern the details of their way of life, including their dress.
Martin's successor, Eugenius IV, was an Augustinian monk and lived simply throughout his life. But he appreciated beauty and brought to Rome Donatello, Fra Angelico and Pisanello to improve the city and its churches.
In the past decades, the people had developed the habit of taking stones, columns or whatever they fancied from the ancient pagan monuments. Eugenius now forbade this, while at the same time encouraging rebuilding of the city.
One of the most important works carried out in Eugenius's time was the construction of the bronze doors for St. Peter's by the Florentine Filarete. The work took 12 years and was completed in 1445. Among other scenes, the artist recorded the Council of Florence in 1439, when the Bull of Reunion between the Eastern and Western churches was signed, a reunion which didn't last. It was opposed by the Greeks as soon as the negotiators returned home, and when Constantinople fell to the Turks in 1453, it became a dead letter.
To the See of Peter now came a man who has been called the Gentle Humanist, but who is probably remembered chiefly for his decision to rebuild St. Peter's. When Nicholas V came to power in 1447, the structure of the basilica was in a very damaged state, and the roof was threatening to fall. Only a century earlier, Benedict XII had spent 80,000 gold florins to repair it. But now it had become unsafe once more, for thousands of rats had made holes in the beams. The southern wall was leaning 3 feet 7 inches to the side, greatly alarming the pilgrims who came to the 1450 Jubilee. Nicholas intended to rebuild the whole church, but the cost of demolishing the old church and building a new one delayed any concrete action for half a century.
What Nicholas did achieve, however, was the reconstruction of the Vatican Palace, which now became the permanent seat of papal government, displacing the Lateran once and for all. In 1448, Pope Nicholas V appointed a papal secretary, a man named Lorenzo Valla, a historian and Latin scholar. In 1444, Valla had published a paper showing the donation of Constantine to be a forgery. It was on this document, in circulation since the 8th century, that the papal claim to temporal power had always rested. Dante had denounced it and declared it invalid, but no one paid him any attention.
Valla was a practicing Christian, and as a present-day historian writes, as much concerned to preserve and spread the faith as the popes themselves. But like the vast majority of his contemporaries, he considered the temporal power an obstacle to this plan. Valla wrote,
"Maybe the day will dawn, and I hope my treatise will hasten the day, when the Pope will be merely the vicar of Christ, and not of Caesar too. When we will hear no longer the horrible news that the Church is fighting the Church, or the Perugians or the Bolognese. It is not the Church that fights against Christians, for the Church can fight only spiritual battles against the spirit of evil. On that day, the Pope will be hailed for what he truly is, a holy father, father of all men, father of the Church, and instead of inciting war between Christians, will make peace by apostolic censure and his intrinsic majesty."
And that concludes today's program. Thanks for listening. I'm Tracy McClure.
You've been listening to the English program of Vatican Radio. Laudator Jesus Christus.